Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, fans and bands rally to save London's Brixton Academy. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when we were all recovering, and by I mean all, we were both, but I'm going to say all in case the listeners want to feel included, because I know some of you were there. Should I start this sentence again? A week when we were all recovering from the Great Escape.
Yeah, but if you're going to go with
the
word all, including our listeners, you're now excluding those listeners who were not at the Great Escape. And maybe that's deliberate. Maybe
were they not there?
If you don't come to our big event, you're not welcome to listen to our podcast. Is that your position? Is
quite
that
right.
The official position of Andy Malt?
Yeah.
What about the people who live a very long way away from Brighton?
Well, make the effort. I made the effort. I live miles away.
What
took
about
me two all, whole hours to get there.
What about all the people who made the effort and came halfway around the planet to London and then found that the train drivers were on strike? What about those people? But hey.
They got legs.
Although I'm more forgiving for those of you listening who did not and could not make it to the Great Escape, you did miss a really great, great escape. The festival was magnificent. And of course, we had our conference. So many interesting conversations. I always think the test of the Great Escape Conference, and particularly the CMU creative strands that sit at the heart of the conference, is how often I feel the urge to bring up things I learned on stage in the meetings I have in the week after the Great Escape. And anyone who's had a meeting with me this week will know. Pretty much every conversation we've had at any meeting I've attended this week, there's been something where it's like, oh, someone said something in the CMU strands of the Great Escape last week that is super relevant to this conversation. So thank you to everybody who joined us on stage for the CMU sessions. Thank you to everyone who came in to the main room at the conference to listen in, to learn, to join the debate. And thank you to everyone who came to the Great Escape at large, the entire conference, the festival. But it is exhausting and we are still slightly recovering from it. Is that fair to say?
Oh, no, I'm feeling all right now, but I had a rough most of this week. I mean, I had several very good nights sleep and still felt exhausted throughout the day afterwards for quite some time, to the point I think Monday's daily that went out and then I immediately fell asleep in my chair, so that was good. So if Monday's daily seemed a bit weird, I probably was half asleep while writing that.
I have exactly 1 week to fully recharge, because at the end of the month, I am going to Athens Music Week. So if you're at Athens Music Week, which is in Athens, I will be there leading a conversation about AI, the thing that no one can shut up about at the moment, but with good reason. So come and join that conversation. I'm also taking part in a panel all about showcase festivals, where I'll be talking about The Great Escape. And I'm delivering a workshop
on Meta
on music publishing. No, I won't be talking about Meta. Facebook will not be part of the conversation while
but
I'm at Athens
surely,
music
I mean,
week.
A panel at a conference to talk about whether panels at conferences are of value seems, I mean, slight inception, isn't it?
It will be a very insightful conversation about the role of showcase festivals as a ground for building businesses and audiences around new talent, the role of conferences and how to get the most out of them is how that conversation is going to go. So yeah, a little bit meta, but all should right. be really interesting. And then the same week, I will also be in Belfast for Output, one of my favourite events. Obviously, The Great Escape is my favourite event because that's the one we organise. But another brilliant event that is happening in Belfast. And I will be talking about the whole economics of streaming work that has been ongoing. And also, I'll be joined by my colleague Phil Nelson to talk about our pathways into music work, which is actually a little bit of a summary of some of the stuff we were talking about on stage at The Great Escape. So those events are coming up. It does also mean I bumped into quite a few regular listeners of Setlist while I was in Brighton, and a couple of those were asking whether or not we are going to get back into that regular every single Monday morning routine that we had for quite some time. So
yeah,
me going to Athens and Belfast probably does mean we're going to have another missing week coming up very soon. But once I'm back from Belfast, and it's June has begun. You are going to be...
No.
What holidays have you got booked
Give it in? To the... Give it... Well, I mean, you've done an update of your itinerary. I mean, I could do mine, but I'm not doing things for work. I'm going to go to York, not for work. I've got a funeral, not work. I'm going to Glastonbury. We could class that as work.
Almost.
But I think all of those things will probably disrupt our schedule. But in July...
I'm looking forward to July. From July onwards...
We might... It is. I mean, yeah, we are sorry.
From it's July been, onwards, you are going
bit,
to
it's
be...
It's been a bit shaky recently, but we are going to get back into that. I think it always goes a bit to shit in the summer, doesn't it?
Well, July is the summer, and we're just proposing that July is when we're going to fix it. It was the spring when it went to shit.
Oh, that's true.
But yeah. The conclusion
okay, but
here
we're
is...
We're going to get back into it.
We're not disappearing. We will be popping up. It may just be there are some missing weeks. But from July onwards, and I mean, we're looking at July 2023 until the end of time, we are going to be so full on every Monday morning, you will not believe it. But, and I think this, more than usual, when I say this at this point in the podcast, I should stress that this logistical conversation that me and Andy have now ended up having is not why we are here this week. It is not what we are talking about on Setlist.
No, later on, we're going to be discussing the latest round in the ongoing battle between the Village People and Donald Trump. But first, more than 20,000 people have made representations to Lambeth Council in support of the Brixton Academy, according to the organisers of a campaign to save the South London music venue. This comes as the local authority considers a request by London's Metropolitan Police to revoke the licence of current operators Academy Music Group. That request was in response to the crowd crush incident that occurred at an Ashiké show last year and which resulted in two deaths. The venue's been closed ever since that incident, and the Live Nation Allied Academy Music Group, or AMG, says that it has provided Lambeth Council and the Metropolitan Police with detailed proposals that it believes will enable the venue to reopen safely. However, the police argue that AMG's analysis of what went wrong at the Ashiké show is far too narrow, as it primarily focuses on crowd management issues that occurred outside the venue. In fact, the Met has stated that it has lost confidence in the premises licence holder and believes that AMG's licence should be revoked.
Now, when it was revealed in April that that was the position that the police were taking, AMG said that it had had regular meetings and discussions with both Metropolitan Police and Lambeth Council, at which it had presented detailed proposals that it believes, as you say, will enable the venue to reopen safely. And it added that it was waiting feedback on those proposals and that it looked forward to hearing from the police as soon as possible in constructive terms. Lambeth Council subsequently published a document that outlined in more detail the concerns of the police. That document said that AMG's internal review of last year's tragic incident and its subsequent proposals for ensuring that nothing like that could ever happen again focuses far too much, as you say, on preventing the crowding around the front doors of the premises that occurred on the night of the crowd crush. The police quoted an AMG submission that had been made, and that submission concluded, and I quote, "The tragic events occurred because a large number of individuals were able to access the front doors of the premises simultaneously and enter the lobby area in an uncontrolled manner. The aim of AMG's proposals for reopening the venue," it then said, "was to remove the risk of that occurring at any future events." But as we say, the police reckon that that is far too narrow an analysis of what went wrong on the night of the 15th of December. AMG appear to regard the incident, say the police, simply as the gathering of the crowd outside the entrance to the academy and the uncontrolled manner of their entry. However, the police say what happened inside is as much part of the incident as what happened outside, if not more so. The fatalities occurred in the foyer after all. And it's for that reason that the police feel that AMG's proposals for reopening the Brixton Academy are not good enough and has led to those concerns about whether or not AMG should continue to hold the licence for the venue at all.
In addition to all that, there have also been allegations that a ticketing scam being run at the venue may have contributed to the incident. So in a BBC report, it was alleged that some of the security personnel at the venue were working in partnership with ticket touts, selling fake tickets to shows at the Brixton Academy, and then ensuring that those fake tickets got the buyers into the building. That scam could have resulted in the Academy being at capacity on the night of the sellout Ashkay show, even though there were still legitimate ticket holders in the crowd outside trying to get in.
So there remain plenty of unanswered questions about what happened last December, and the Metropolitan Police's investigation is very much ongoing. That said, while the exact circumstances that led to last year's crowd crush remain unclear, the music community is nevertheless keen to ensure that the Brixton Academy is still able to operate as a venue in the long term. And it was with that in mind that earlier this month, the Nighttime Industry Association teamed up with the Save Our Scene campaign and a thing called the Brixton BID, which is a collective of local businesses in that part of London, to urge both music fans and the music community to communicate their support for the Brixton Academy to Lambeth Council. And the deadline for doing that, in terms of the review of the Brixton Academy licence that has been instigated by the request by the police, ended last week.
So the three organisations put together some proposed text for people to include in their representations to the council, noting that the Brixton Academy attracts over 650,000 people and 150 shows a year, and has cemented itself as one of the most culturally significant performance spaces in the UK. Without this venue in London, the text says, we would see a huge void in our cultural economy, a considerable gap in touring capability, loss of jobs, and one less platform for headline domestic and international artists to perform, losing out to our international counterparts. This venue is a huge talent bed for new artists, and for many performing within this space, it has been a turning point within their career, with many artists today citing this space as one of their pinnacle career moments. The proposed text also specifically supports AMG, saying, for decades, the Brixton Academy under Academy Music Group management has been a safe and inclusive space for people to enjoy a wide range of cultural activities, from awards, live and recorded music, comedy, to corporate events and filming. The venue has a considerable workforce and is one of the key employers for young people within the area, supporting a wide range of businesses and freelancers within the local community and across the UK, making a huge contribution to the local and national economy. It then later adds, I have not lost, obviously it's I because it's supposed to come from you personally as a submitting your submission, I have not lost sight of the tragic incident that occurred in December, but would respectfully ask you to consider working with AMG and the venue to learn from what has happened and enhance the license to ensure that this could never happen again.
Now, as I say, the deadline for people to make those submissions to Lambeth Council passed last week, and shortly after the deadline, the Nighttime Industry Association revealed that more than 20,000 representations had been made. I think that means via the website it had set up with that proposed text. And the trade group CEO, Michael Kill, said, we have been overwhelmed with the level of response to this campaign, with over 20,000 representations made by music fans to Lambeth Council. He also noted the support that was coming from within the music industry and the music community. Artists like The Prodigy, Muse and Skunk Anansie had backed the campaign, the label defected, and media like Enemy, Mixmag and Music Week were amongst those providing their support. Meanwhile, the boss of the Save Our Scene campaign added, the response to this campaign has been immense and further highlights the public's desire for Brixton Academy to have a future as a live music venue. Lambeth Council must do everything they can to preserve Brixton Academy. Displacing a community would be a dangerous move, which could result in a lot more work for themselves and the Metropolitan Police. That's partly based on the argument that if there are fewer venues within London for events to take place in, then parties will spill over into more informal places, creating more challenges down the line. Meanwhile, the boss of the Brixton BID, which brings together businesses which are based around the venue, said the huge support for the Brixton Academy, with 20,000 letters submitted to Lambeth Council and thousands of messages across all social media, show the importance of this venue. He then also stressed, and I guess from the perspective of his members, this is an important point, that the venue being closed right now, just in the short term, let alone the long term, is having quite a big impact on other businesses in that part of London. We cannot forget, he said, that a delayed decision has a negative impact on Brixton businesses. In fact, since its closure, over £500,000 per week is being lost in visitor spending. Let's turn the lights back on for Brixton.
Now, to what extent that support will impact on any decisions made by Lambeth Council remains to be seen. From what we hear, neither the council nor the police actually want to see the venue close. The council in particular recognises how important it is for the borough's economy, as the boss of Brixton BID pointed out. However, the question is, can the police be persuaded that the Academy Music Group is the company to safely reopen the venue? And if not, what position will the council take? And if AMG was to lose its licence, who else could operate the venue? We will obviously continue to monitor this story closely and may well get back to you on a future edition of Setlist. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, back in 2020, you may remember reporting on the Village People's ongoing attempts to stop Donald Trump from playing their music at his political rallies became something of a regular job for us. I think that made it onto Setlist as well as regular appearances in the CMU Daily. But yeah, it's been a while. But that fight is back on. This time, Trump annoyed the Village People by hosting a party at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, which featured a group of men dressed up like the legendary disco group and performing their hits.
Yeah, so as you say, the Village People have made various attempts over the years to stop Donald Trump from using their music at mainly political rallies, where he got into the habit of playing particularly YMCA and Macho Man, and both he and his base, his supporters, seem to get very into dancing to that songs, even though given the culture that music comes from, it always seemed really bizarre. But I guess, with the past criticisms that Village People have made about their music being used at Donald Trump rallies, we ended up back into familiar territory. Obviously, Village People were by no means the only artists to take offence when their tracks were used at political events by Trump. The challenge is, can artists do anything about that? Because political events generally license any music that is used at those events through the music industry's collecting societies, through the collective licensing system, which in the US generally means BMI and ASCAP. Now, there is, under the BMI and ASCAP system, a specific license for overtly political events, and there is actually a system whereby individual artists and writers can pull their music out of that license. That said, we've never completely got to the bottom of how that works, and when a political event is obliged to use the specific political license, when they can rely on licenses that the venues that they use will already have. So what it has often meant is that when Village People tracks or any other tracks have been used at Donald Trump's events, quite often the artists whose music is being used have ultimately concluded that there's nothing they can do under copyright law to stop their music from being played. They can't sue Donald Trump or his campaign for it. So what they've generally done in the past, both Village People and others, is just moan about it on social media. And prior to the Trump phenomenon, generally, when politicians, particularly controversial politicians, generally right-wing politicians, use music at events without license, if the artist then complained about it on social media and there was a bit of a backlash among their fan base, the politicians would then just stop using that music. But of course, Donald Trump is not a politician to be bothered about people complaining on social media about him. So although there were certain artists where he would say, OK, I'm going to stop using their music because they're moaning on social media, he would usually say, I don't want to use their music anyway. I don't like their music. But in some cases, and particularly with Village People, he just ignored all of the complaints on social media and the backlash on social media and continued to use their music.
So back in early 2021, the Village People were hoping that Trump leaving the White House might solve the problem and told Billboard at the time, we have no ill will towards the president, but we asked him to cease and desist using our music long ago. However, since he's a bully, our request was ignored. Thankfully, he's now out of office, so it would seem his abusive use of our music has finally ended. It seems like they do have some ill will towards him. Anyway, now that Trump is very much back on the political radar, if he ever left it, it seems that so is his undying love for the Village People.
And hence this performance at his resort in Florida, where basically it was a Village People tribute act. I don't know if they were singing the songs or they were just dancing along. There were various photos doing the round of social media of them dressed up in the classic Village People costumes, Donald Trump dancing along. It's so bizarre.
It was only photos of Donald Trump dancing along. And I think like what I really remember from this story a couple of years ago was the videos of him dancing along that were, I mean, we'll never forget those. What a strange thing to happen. Anyway, sorry, carry on. Just got lost in a memory for a second.
So much of this is just bizarre. Anyway, this event at Mar-a-Lago and crucially the footage of it that then did the rounds on social media has resulted in another cease and desist letter coming from the Village People camp, in particular from the wife of the founder member and lead singer of the band, Victor Willis. His wife, Karen Willis, who is also his manager, sent another stern letter to the Donald Trump team, which was also posted on social media, reckoning that with this particular event and the nature of this event, that maybe even if there isn't a claim under copyright law to stop Donald Trump from using the Village People's music, maybe when it comes to this kind of performance at an event, maybe there's a claim under trademark law. That is what Karen Willis is hoping and stated in this latest cease and desist letter.
So she writes, "We have been inundated with social media posts about the imitation performance, which many fans and the general public as well mistakenly believe to be that of the actual Village People, which she says puts Trump and Mar-a-Lago in violation of the US Lanham Act, which is basically the trademark law. Therefore," she goes on, "the performance has and continues to cause public confusion as to why Village People would even engage in such a performance. We did not. Moreover, your client is hereby on notice that US trademark law protects against the unauthorized use of the Village People image and trade dress. To be certain, the use of the group's image and likeness at Mar-a-Lago was unauthorized. Though my husband has tolerated your client's use of his Village People music, we cannot allow such use by him to cause public confusion as to endorsement." I don't think he has tolerated Trump's use of his music. It's continued to happen while he has not been tolerating it. But anyway, the letter goes on. "Therefore, it is requested that he cease and desist any such further unauthorized use of the Village People image in association with the songs and his campaign, or in his personal capacity. Otherwise, we shall be forced to bring suit preventing further use, not only of the Village People trademarked image and trade dress, but of the music as well. And we'd hate to have to do that. But such combined use causes public confusion and is suggestive of endorsement." She then concludes by giving a 10-day deadline to be informed of Trump's intentions, if any, to put on further unauthorized performances of Village People lookalikes combined with Village People music. So we'll see if she gets a response from that. I think we're getting a quote coming up that suggests probably not.
Yeah, whether or not a claim under trademark law will be easier for the Village People to pursue than previous claims under copyright law, not sure. I guess we may see down the line, but it doesn't look like Donald Trump or his legal team are willing to immediately come back and say, "All right, then, you're right. We will not use your music. We will not perform." In fact, a legal rep for the former president issued a very snooty statement, proving, as always, that Donald Trump definitely, as his base seemed to believe, is a man of the people. Basically, Trump's lawyer said in a statement to the media, "I only talk to lawyers. Do the Village People even have a lawyer? I'm not talking to the wife of the frontman." Of course, the wife of the frontman is the manager of Victor Willis of Village People. She's also a lawyer, so I don't know what he's talking about. But basically, the statement that came in from Trump's legal rep said, "I will only deal with the attorney of the Village People if they have one, not the wife of one of the members of the group." He then issued a follow-on statement, which is kind of stuff that Trump himself might say, saying that the Village People should be thankful that President Trump allowed them to get their name back in the press, with the lawyer then adding, "I haven't heard their name in decades. Glad to hear they are still around."
What an absolute dick. Fuck. Ugh. Yeah, this is all coming back, isn't it?
It is all coming back. And of course,
this seemed like a fun story to end on, and now I'm just depressed.
Obviously, with all of the many, many, many legal woes that Trump has had in recent times and generally running out of lawyers willing to represent him. So I guess we are in a position where only the real dicks of the US legal profession are left to be issuing statements on his behalf. But whether or not a trademark action will actually be pursued by British people, I suspect not, but we will see. I think what's probably pretty certain is that given that Donald Trump is back on the campaign trail trying to get the presidency back, that unfortunately for Victor Willis, he is going to have to see Trump and his supporters. Weirdly, we cannot stress how weird it is that these are the songs they've picked, dancing along to YMCA and Macho Man for some time to come.
God. Right, that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read any more about anything we've discussed here, go to the show notes in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you haven't done that, because then all new episodes will be delivered to you automatically, and that is fun. You can rate and review the show as well. That's fun, really super fun. And you can email us. Why not? So that could be fun. Emailing's fun. I think email's about to have a revival. Did email go away? I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just trying to segue into this email address, which is setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.